Are you tired of working with generic IT providers that rely on you to be the expert? Arc IT goes beyond just fixing your tech headaches. They specialize in proactive IT management, BIM support, and data security for architecture firms. The team at Arc IT gets your tech so you can focus on doing your best work. Whether you're a small firm of 10 or a growing practice with 50 or more employees, unleash the full potential of your creative vision with Arc IT. Visit getarcit.com and schedule your free IT assessment today.
And that was the restaurant.
Kind of the birthplace of it then, huh?
Not necessarily.
I know one of the biggest things in construction of the restaurant really has to do with the city and the permits and...
Then the last one is the fast casual.
And I feel like that's the dominant player in the market right now. Oh,
yeah, for sure. This is like the biggest thing since sliced bread right now.
The building industry has long been reluctant to change. When things are going well, developers and builders have had no incentive to rock the boat. But now... Post-recession, a shift in society and culture has ushered in a tidal wave of change in the industry, and there's no going back. Welcome to Spaces, where we explore and analyze how the building industry is evolving, from design and construction to management and economics. Join hosts Jason, Ali, and Demetrius as they discuss the evolution of your spaces.
Hello, welcome to Spaces. My name is Demetrius. No Ali today, but this is Jason.
Hey guys, how we doing?
And this is Spaces. Welcome back to the show. If you are a new listener, thanks for joining us. Jason, how's your week been?
I think like most people in our industry would probably say right now, or pretty much any industry these days, the economy's pretty good. We're moving at a pretty fast and furious pace. I don't know anybody that I'm talking to that isn't saying something of a similar accord. But for the most part, you know, it's our teams are keeping up. The industry is doing quite well. So we're having some fun and family time and things like that. Or, you know, when we're not at the office, full bore into, you know, spending and hanging time with the family, which is great. So, but very, very, very busy right now.
Yeah, I saw you... posted a picture. You were out doing your normal walk at Balboa.
Freaking pissed, man. Yeah, I was bummed. I mean, I know everybody's, we've talked about it before. I definitely have an inner fat kid, which, you know, I think everybody should treat once in a while. And the one place we like to go to before we go to church on Sundays, walk around Balboa, and the cinnamon roll place, Blue Chair Bakery, was closed, man. I was so ticked. I mean, I felt bad the last time I did it. And I told the gal, I'm like, look, no more vacations. Well, she freaking skipped a week again. So, yeah, I was... I had to settle for an apple fritter, which was not the same.
Oh, man.
Yeah, I was freaking pissed.
Yeah, when I saw you post that, I was like, oh, he's going to be out.
Oh, man, I was so ticked. Yeah, so ticked.
Funny. Yeah, but when you talk about the, you know, how busy everybody is, me as my, you know, starting out company, it's, I'm feeling it too.
That's awesome.
Because I'm assisting some people right now. And they're just scrambling, still looking for help because it's just everybody's that slammed.
Good for you.
But I do have some good news. I've gotten, I think, two projects kind of my own in the pipeline that I'm still kind of trying to finalize, but got a couple things kind of on the hopper. So
good for you, man. Congrats.
Yeah. So because of that, I had to get, and because I'm, you know, helping other people, got my bank accounts set up, which is a kind of a crazy process.
Yeah.
And have you set up a bank account for your company?
Yeah.
So
it's invasive.
I tried to do you know, the credit union first.
Yep.
And they have, you know, so many hoops you have to jump through and paperwork and you know, 48-hour back, or not background check, but, you know, check.
Oh yeah.
And I need it kind of quick, so I ended up going with you know, a big bank. And because of their infrastructure already set, they were able to get me out of there in, you know, an
pretty
hour.
Quick.
Yeah, with the account. So it was good. But Yeah, it's kind of fun.
Learn a lot going through it though, don't you?
Yeah. So company's growing slowly but surely. And then
forward's forward, man. Doesn't matter.
Yeah, exactly. And then the last thing that I kind of ran into over the last few weeks is I found out it is extremely difficult to give money away.
In what regard are we? Well, you can give me money whenever you want. I'll accept it. But what exactly are we referring to?
So for our photo contest, we've been running that little promo before every episode. I'm surprised that not more people kind of jumped in to participate. We got a couple people, but I'm shocked that people didn't want to get free money.
I think it's the scenario of like the hot girl in the room. Nobody goes and actually asks her out, right? Because everybody assumes everybody else is doing it.
Yeah. I went ahead and picked someone. His name is Rodney Robles of Factor Recurso. And they're based in Monterrey, Mexico.
Sweet. International.
Yeah. I think he has a team there. And I checked out his Instagram. It's pretty cool work that they do. Kind of an interior architectural firm.
Sweet.
Doing like restaurants and that kind of interior work. Cool company. Cool guy. Talked to him a little bit. He opted to not take the money. And he's going to donate it. So he'll follow up with us.
Check it out, man. There still are good people in the world, huh?
So they're going to donate it and let us know who they want to go to. So we'll go ahead and jump into the episode today, talking about restaurants. And as a historical background, restaurants have basically been around since as far back as kind of early civilization. And they've been sort of a staple that correlate with growing cities. Farmers, they would basically, you know, cart their goods from their farm or wherever they were into the city. And those are usually like several day trips. So once they got to the city, they had to, you know, unload and they would be there for a couple days selling things off. And they needed these places to eat. And that was the restaurant.
Kind of the birthplace of it then, huh?
Not necessarily. Not what we would consider the restaurant today. But it was more of a... like we talked about before, those taverns or inns.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
So it was more like you just, they're eating houses. So you just kind of go in and there's a open table and everybody just sits there. It's not kind of your own individual table.
Got it.
But what happened was around the French Revolution, 1765 is when what we know as the restaurant kind of started to come to form. And I'm going to attempt to do this in... my butchered version of French. A man named Monsieur Boulanger.
Monsieur Boulanger.
Yeah, there you go. He had a eatery and there was a sign there that said, oh my God, this is going to be so hard. Boulanger de Pit des Restaurants de Vins, which translates to Boulanger sells restoratives fit for the gods. And that's what restaurant is a derivative of, is okay. The word restaurateur, which means to restore or refresh.
Hmm.
At the time, there were these guilds that they called that basically had, they were dedicated to a particular thing. So there was like a meat guild.
Okay.
Nobody else could make meat except people that were in this guild.
Got it.
Nobody could do certain soups or
so whatever. It's like the unions.
Yeah, exactly. So this guy had the nerve to put lamb inside of his soup, which was a no-no because he stepped on two people's toes, and they actually sued him because of it, and he had to go through this huge lawsuit, and he actually won. And over the next 20 years the guilds kind of started to fade away, and on the back of the fall of Marie Antoinette and Louis the 16th.
Okay.
And kind of the fall of that that monarchy. People that were, you know, butlers and chefs at these different royal families and those type of settings ended up out of work. So when they came out, a lot of them started up their own restaurants.
Oh, that makes sense.
And they had that kind of high-end quality to their service. Which ended up becoming kind of a fine dining setting.
Got it.
So you end up with a nice white tablecloth and high quality service. But the funny thing about this whole story is that it could or could not be true. It's in what they consider like a food Bible in France.
Okay.
But there was a recent, a recent reporter that went on a journey to try and figure out, you know,
like uncover the facts, yeah, type uncover of deal.
The facts, okay, of who was actually considered the first person to start a restaurant. And she could not find anything about Monsieur Boulanger.
Interesting.
But she couldn't necessarily prove that it wasn't.
Didn't exist either. Yeah. Huh.
She couldn't even find, you know, the lawsuit, records of the lawsuit. So,
wow.
It's interesting. But
spent a lot of time fabricating it if it's not real.
Yeah, there's a lot of detail for a false story. So I'm going to assume that it was true. So after the French Revolution and, kind of as globalization started to erupt, travel increased. We kind of touched on it in our hotel episode. As people started to branch out, they brought all of these different concepts and ideas like this fine dining all over the place, and that's kind of how the restaurant
concepts. That makes sense. I mean, especially if they pop into an area that doesn't have anything like it, you're able to draw a whole lot more.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, exactly. So when we talk about restaurants, there are several types that we'll look at, and there's the fine dining, family style, a buffet, a cafe or bistro, the fast food, food truck, which isn't really a restaurant, but
yeah, we'll, I don't just know if that's a restaurant.
We'll just consider it,
it's definitely relevant for the time, though.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We'll consider it an eating establishment. And then the fast casual. But we'll jump into, more specifics about that a little bit later. So I wanted to kind of talk about the design. And when you're designing a restaurant, some things to be, wary of or kind of look for. So when you're designing a restaurant, there are two things that you absolutely need to consider. One is the concept and story of the restaurant.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of chefs or restaurateurs, I think is the word.
Yeah, restaurateurs.
Want to, convey a certain story or kind of concept to their eating and their space. So, getting that down. And then the second part is the operation of the restaurant. And when I talk about operation, you want to know, where the guest's going to arrive, the route of the food from the kitchen to the table, how many people, how many waiters you're going to have on staff. So that kind of thing. You have to know all those little details to basically kind of figure out your space planning. But then there's subtle things, nuanced elements that you want to also consider based on the type of restaurant that you have. But on the construction side, there's a ton of elements to consider. I think, in my opinion, I think the two, or I guess three big elements. One is plumbing, I would say, mechanical, and then your equipment and finishes.
Right.
From your perspective, what do you think is sort
of... I know one of the biggest things in construction of the restaurant really has to do with the city and the permits and passing all of the... requirements that they have, know what I mean? When you're talking about cleanliness and you're talking about, serviceability, fire. I mean, all those types of things that go into it, it gets really heavy because then you're starting to, mess with your occupancies and everything else. So specs on appliances that you're using, the BTUs that everything goes through, exhausting. I mean, there's a lot of stuff that goes into it that can really foul you up and does. Yeah. I mean, if somebody doesn't read the specs properly and ducks it incorrectly, you've got an issue.
Yeah.
Obviously all the clean outs that they have from a plumbing perspective and everything else is like a big, big deal. And the, in-floor drains and everything else that they have to deal with.
Yeah.
Being able to wash the floors and everything like that, and where that's going to drain to is the other thing, because you got to have floor drains every so,
And usually when you come into when you're doing a restaurant, you're coming into a built out space or a shell, basically.
Right. Correct.
So you end up cutting up
that concrete. Oh, you're saw cutting everything. So to get the proper drops and, falls for plumbing, so there's no backups and everything else like that is, it's like a remodel.
Yeah.
Right? So you're basically trying, and that happens all the time, because we know the one thing with the restaurant industry, it's like the number one business of failures. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like very few small percentage actually succeed.
Yeah.
So they're constantly trying to outfit these things and re-outfit them. So it's there's a lot to contend with. I mean, the other thing too being the design, right? When you get into design and the finishes, you usually have a lot of unique elements that aren't off the shelf. You know what I mean? So a lot of stuff is being custom made and built and has multiple different trades that are associated with it, whether it's finished carpentry with bars, metal. I mean, all these different kind of things that go into it.
Yeah.
It's not something that's easily just thrown together.
Yeah. On a phasing front of that, I would imagine that dealing with all those different types of custom finishes in conjunction with your equipment, that's kind of a nightmare.
Like major lead time issues. Yeah. I mean, once one thing's thrown off, you can't get something, you know, passed or cleared in order to start the next phase. And like I have a neighbor of mine who's, you know, like a strong acquaintance friend, if you will, mm-hmm. that's going through building a restaurant right now. And he's hit delay after delay after delay because this appliance hasn't shown up when it's supposed to, you know what I mean? One of them was a stove. The other one was the exhaust fan. And then, you know, custom bars having been made is like still not done. You know, there's a lot of things that they run into. And the hard part with that is, you know, these guys are leasing or renting space. Yeah. And the whole time you're in the build out, you're generally paying for that space and you've got nothing to offset that debt.
Yeah.
You know, so you really need to get there and get up and moving and working quickly to start generating revenue.
Yeah.
So he's in the hole because he's a bit behind.
Yeah.
And that doesn't even take into account like some of these breweries and stuff and the rest of the things that they have to do.
Yeah.
You know, where you've got the restaurant brewery, you know, scenario. It's a entirely different ballgame at that point. So it's you can face a lot of delays.
Yeah. We were just talking kind of off mic about projects that you've worked on kind of currently where the phasing gets thrown off.
Yeah. I mean, even just a normal, you know, residential construction, you know, we're showing up to do, you know, you're scheduled to do something and the trades before you haven't done what they're supposed to do and you can't work. And now everything just is a domino effect.
Yeah.
So, and that's a problem I think that's really prevalent in our industry right now. If you're setting schedules with somebody, it's not one of those things where you can just tell them, okay, well then come back tomorrow. Like they may be like, sorry, bub, like I've got an opening in 2 weeks.
Yeah.
And then that opening in 2 weeks from there for them to complete their work messes up all the other guys behind them. And now you start getting into those big delays that you're having. So hopefully you don't run into that too hard.
Yeah.
But it's something that is definitely kind of systematic right now, yeah. which is really frustrating for a lot of people.
Yeah. From a coordination front between, you know, build and design, have you seen anything that has made phasing kind of a little bit cleaner?
Well, I think as long as it's not a complicated build, yeah. I mean, that's the easiest thing to point to.
Yeah.
But the problem is on paper, it all looks good until somebody has to perform it.
Yeah.
And right now in any industry, you know, that has to deal with construction, whether it be commercial, which is essentially what restaurants fall under, or residential, it's a field struggle. Yeah. Everybody's got their schedule set. That should be a 120-day schedule, but it doesn't take into account the delays that they're receiving because people just don't show. They forgot to order something. You know, there's questions, RFIs, you know, which is the big thing that goes into commercials, all about RFIs, right?
Yeah.
And those types of things. So simplicity is key.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? That's why one of the biggest home builders now, everything is simplicity, simplicity. But that makes it easier to where you're not having to stop and think a lot. You're able to just go right through and it's pretty basic.
Yeah.
But then again, a lot of the restaurants like we're talking about, I know a couple off the top of my head where we go to because they're super cool. Yeah. I mean, the experience is wonderful. The food is fantastic. Price isn't great. but, you know, you can't have all those elements without paying for it, you know? So, but that was probably not a very simplistic build, you know what I mean? And that's where some of those things take time. And I don't think people necessarily properly account for that.
Yeah. Yeah. I think kind of with the talking about simplicity, when you're getting into those hospitality type arenas, simplicity has gone out the window because it's about,
simplicity, you know, doesn't sell.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, it doesn't sell.
It's about that experience and, you know, providing an environment that people want to come and visit and experience in different ways and, you know, see it from a different angle every time they show up. So, yeah, simplicity is
not. Yeah, Red Robin's not Mastro's. You know what I mean? It's just not.
So with that said, we'll jump into the a little more detail of psychology of design, which I found really interesting kind of digging into this a little bit more. So in a fast food establishment, I'm sure everyone has noticed this, but when you go to a fast food place, all of the seating is terrible.
Mm-hmm. They want you in and out.
It is highly uncomfortable. They don't want you hanging out. I haven't really noticed this, but one of the articles that I read, they talked about in fast food places, they generally will have kind of upbeat music because they want you to get in and out.
Yep.
And then in the fine dining, obviously the opposite of that. It's much more luxurious materials, comfortable chairs, because they want you to kind of hang out and enjoy the environment.
And spend more money.
Basically eat more.
Drink more. Yeah. I don't think it's eat more. I think it's drink more. There you go. Yeah.
And then on the lighting side, lighting is huge. They say you want to have kind of more soft and flattering light because it makes the patron more comfortable because they feel like they look good, have the good lighting, taking pictures and whatnot. So they're more comfortable with hanging out, ordering more food and more drinks. As opposed to, and I've seen this like at a Red Robin or something, it's just the down lighting right over the table.
Yeah.
And it creates all these weird shadows and it's not all that flattering if you're on Instagram or something. And when you talk about kind of those aesthetic elements, color is huge. Surprisingly, two colors that you should not use in a restaurant, red and blue.
That's funny because the one I just mentioned, Master, was like, there's a lot of red in there.
Is there?
Yeah, at least the one I went to in Costa Mesa.
Okay.
I mean, I haven't been there for a few months.
Yeah.
But that's what I remember, was it being pretty, like, there. I mean, well, at least the entrance wall.
Yeah.
Was like red.
It's to push you in or out.
Hmm, maybe.
So, so red, almost considered by all experts to increase your heart rate, your blood pressure, and stimulate impulse eating. So when I thought red, I immediately thought of McDonald's.
Yeah, that's a good point. All the seats and everything else. Yeah.
So red apparently works well for fast food restaurants because their goal is volume. So you get really hyped and you have impulse eating. So you gorge yourself and then you get out of there really quick to make room for the next person. And then blue is a no-no because it doesn't invoke hunger, apparently.
Huh.
It's actually considered more of a thirst driver. So you want to use blue in like bars and stuff like that.
Oh, that's kind of what I'm thinking of, actually.
Yeah. And it's kind of more of a darker setting anyway, kind of in a club or bar setting.
Yeah.
But the colors you do want to use are greens and browns, which are soft natural colors and invokes kind of a relaxed, natural kind of environment. Oranges and yellows give you kind of a sense of physical attachment and cheerfulness. On that fine dining front, we talked about it a little bit. It's more of it offers the patrons the finest in food, service, and atmosphere, but you also pay for it.
Yes, you do. When you're talking, I can always tell when it's that restaurant where they've got like the butter knife that removes the crumbs.
Butter
knife. Well, I don't know. They have, I mean, it's, you know, the waiter comes by or whomever it is, and they have the little knife and they kind of pull the crumbs off the table with the knife. You've ever seen it? Yeah, you know what I'm talking about? Yeah. Or the indicator to me is when they have both a white and black napkin. So depending on what you're wearing, they'll put either a white napkin on there or a black napkin. So if you're wearing dark, they'll put the black so you don't get the white lint.
Oh, wow. I have never noticed.
Yeah, subtle that. Little things that you notice.
That's fine dining.
No, you know, I think I have seen it at fine dining, but I've seen it, you know, in things that would be a little bit more mid-road, you know, maybe that are just trying to be classy and their food's not as good. But but yeah, those are always indicators for it. Like, I always laugh, right? I'm like, dude, I'm not that messy. Like, you don't need to remove my crumbs or give me, you know, two different napkins.
The crumb one always trips me out because it's so weird to see them. Like,
not only that, like, have you tried to do that yourself? Like, I'm horrible at it. Like, they make it look so easy, and I just, like, I don't know how I mess it up so bad.
And they do this, like, really fluid kind of flick.
Oh, yeah. It's like the like the princess wave, except, like, on the tablecloth, right?
Yeah. So one of the projects I wanted to point out as an example, I mean, we all, I think, have, like, a certain restaurant in our minds. But one I wanted to point out actually is an award-winning project through the American Institute of Architects. Called ATX Cocina in Austin, Texas. And this is designed by Michael Su, Office of Architecture. And it's a pretty cool project where if you check out our website, we'll have photos up. It has this nice sweeping curved ceiling, which is kind of
like barrel-like.
Yeah, that's sort of a half barrel, but it's all wood siding treatment. There's tons of materials. It's kind of an open design. It has like one room cut off as a private space, but open plan. You can see clearly through into the bar and kind of some of the prep area. But there's tons of materials. If you saw all of these materials just laid out on a table, you would not think it works that well.
Yeah, it wouldn't mesh well.
But it actually works out pretty nice. It has like a...
It's very natural feel.
Yeah. So it's all kind of that birch wood type look.
Lots of browns, like Demetrius was saying.
Yeah.
Some oranges. Yeah. Pretty much zero red.
Yeah. Yeah. So they pretty much nailed this one down to a T of what we're talking about of good things to do in your restaurant design.
And I think the thing about the restaurants too, you know, some of the biggest elements that I noticed at the ones we go to, there's a couple restaurants, I'll throw them out. That my wife and I like to enjoy is Seasons 52. I don't know if you've ever been there. I don't want to call it an appetizer restaurant, but it's not like when you're like starving, you don't go there because the portions aren't big. Mm. But
it's like the tapas style.
Maybe, but it's like it's decent portions, but it's super fresh. And what I like about the restaurant though, there's almost like multiple elements to it. You got the bar area where they got the piano, you know, kind of in the middle of the bar, and you can kind of hang out. There's seating around the bar out there as well. To actually do regular dining, but then they also have like separate, it's a huge restaurant that's actually in South Coast.
Yeah.
But they've got like separate areas where it's like totally detached dining where you can not be part of the bar, if you will, and have decent conversation. It's pretty loud as it is, but it's almost like you have multiple elements to it.
Yeah.
The other one that we like is, I think it's called Fig and Olive. That might be Fashion Island. But, you know, super, super fresh food. Very, very similar to this one that you're showing here.
Yeah.
Really light, very comfortable, environment. They definitely want you to stay and have wine and do, we don't drink wine, so whatever.
Yeah.
but it has, again, a really nice, like, upbeat bar area, a nice lounge area that they'll serve drinks to as well, and then your regular dining area. So it's almost like you need multi-like components to be able to bring in a few different walks, but it all meshes really, really well together.
Oh, okay.
It's kind of cool.
Yeah. Some of the jury comments for this award selection, it said this project presented design harmony in all aspects and throughout, from the material palette to the color palette, and just the way the space were arranged, even the selection of furniture. This is one of the projects that really attempted to customize every aspect of the space. The ceiling detailing, it's a pretty spectacular portion of the project, and not only the curved ceiling, but even its flat portion realized a high amount of detail. Yeah. The red and bold hue, the blue as well. I didn't see any
blue. I didn't see any red.
I didn't see blue or red. It's weird. And then it says, this is Texas. There are 40 different items that are actually detailed, but they work together as a single project. So that's kind of in reference to that, all those different materials.
Yeah. No, it looks good.
The other kind of restaurant style is the family style.
Like a Buca di Beppo
exactly.
type of deal.
Yeah, that's
I hate those places.
You just don't like sharing with people?
I don't like, there's, you know, there's that Friends episode where like Joey doesn't share food. Remember when he had to create like the fry buffer plate? Did you ever see that one?
I am not a
Friends. I hate sharing food. Like absolutely hate it. If you want that, order your own. You know what I mean? Like stay away from my plate. But there's something to me about, which is funny because I like buffets, right? Okay. But it's interesting because it's like, I don't like multiple hands reaching into food. And I know they're not grabbing it with their hands. I mean, I'm not, you know, crazy like that, but it's just, I don't like it. I don't like, and a lot of it's Italian.
Yeah.
Right. A lot of it's Italian. I just am not.
Do you not like Italian food or just that?
It's not my go-to.
Okay.
You know what I mean? Like I don't mind it. There's some stuff I do like, you know what I mean? But I just don't like, almost like the other thing is like, I don't like paella, right?
Okay.
I mean, I like paella, but I don't like it. It's on this massive plate and everybody's reaching in there and getting scoops of it. Like, I just have this problem with it, which is funny because I'm not a hand sanitizer guy either. You know what I mean? Like, I can't stand that, but I don't like this like mass amount of sharing food. I don't do that.
That's hilarious.
Yeah.
So the family style, the buffet, which you mentioned.
Hey, man. All you can eat.
That's all Vegas.
Big fan.
Vegas buffets.
Like, because you can get a little bit of everything.
Yeah.
I think it's amazing.
Yeah.
And then you look at that guy that's cutting the prime rib and you're like, really? One piece?
Yeah.
Keep going, buddy. I'll be back anyway. You know what I mean?
So when I went, I went to Vegas recently and we did the buffet thing and...
You're like $40 for a buffet, right?
Yeah. Well, my buddy who kind of headed up this whole trip. He's a big gambler, so he has
all the
credits. Yeah.
Yeah.
So it was partially comped, but we got to the prime rib guy, and he was so stingy.
That's what I'm saying.
And he got angry. Like, we were trying to, you know, ask for more and ask what's what, and he was irate. Like,
yeah.
He just did not.
That's what I'm saying. They get all crazy. It's like, dude, I'm just going to go come back again anyway. Like, you might as well just load it up. You know what I mean? I don't really want to see you that often. Like, give me a couple more pieces, you know? Can only eat so much of that fried chicken that's there, you know?
So next is the cafe or bistro. And those are sort of, that's kind of really European influence.
What's like an example of that out here?
There's not really a sort of a chain or something that you would know, you know, right off.
Is this like a mom and pop little thing?
Yeah, they're more mom and pop. I've seen quite a few in like San Francisco.
Okay.
Yeah, like little mom and pop, small. But their signature thing is kind of the outdoor seating.
Yeah, like the little wire mesh table and stuff like that.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So that's
it's got a base with a flower in it.
It can.
It does.
Yeah. So that's the cafe or bistro. And then you have the fast food, which we talked about and everybody knows. That's McDonald's, Burger King, Taco Bell. And those are actually, surprisingly, the initial cost of franchising those fast food places are more expensive than opening an independent restaurant.
Yeah, it's huge. But you basically, I mean, kind of the whole concept behind it is you basically have a program that you can't screw up.
Yeah, kind of.
I mean, the joke I have with my dad, or my dad always makes a joke. He only knows of one McDonald's that's ever had to shut down. You know what I mean? Like one, like, I mean, if you think about it, they pop up everywhere.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And for the most part, they're busy.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like there's no escaping it. So it's almost like you're given a proven business plan and you got to be a serious idiot to mess it up. You know, I mean, that's the only, and so for the one guy out there that did, I'm sorry, but you know, it's what it seems like at least. Right.
Yeah. I don't know of many McDonald's for sure, but I don't know many fast food places that kind of,
I've seen a couple Jack in the Boxes that have come and gone. I've seen, I think KFC is the one that's been, that for a while was like dissipating. Do you remember?
They had a big issue about animal treatment, the treatment of the chickens and how they stored them. That was a really bad one.
So. Yeah, but I mean, they were kind of out, you know, for a while, it felt like. But the rest of them, I agree. I mean, for the most part, they kind of truck along.
Yeah.
You know, because I think Jack had that issue with donkey meat or something one time.
What?
Yeah, yeah. I think there's something like that way back. Look, I'm not advocating one way or the other. I'm just saying, like, I know there was some issue where there's some, like, horse meat or something. I swear to you.
Oh, my God. I do not recall that one.
Yeah, I don't know.
Someone has to fact check that.
All I know is I'm, somebody should fact check that. So that was a few years back. The only thing I'm super excited about, like, when we're talking fast food, and I really don't eat fast food.
Yeah.
Like, I would love to every day. Like, Del Taco?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. But Carl's is pressing hard on the original Western Bacon Cheeseburger.
Oh, my God.
Dude, I don't care who's listening to this right now. You can't tell me that one of your happiest times is not sitting there smashing a Western Bacon Cheeseburger and what used to be, was it Chris Cut Fries?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Dude, that was killer, man. That was like the best, right?
With the new promo with Matthew McConaughey.
Yeah, it sounds good, man.
Western Bacon Cheeseburger, cheese, bacon, Western Bacon Cheeseburger. I'm talking Carl Jr., pick it up. Western Bacon Cheeseburger, Carl Jr., pick it up.
It sounds so good.
That is the most hilarious.
I don't know if it's his voice or whatever that's on there, but it makes it sound so good again. Like, I don't care what anybody, and my son loves those things. Like, my 9-year-old, he'll freaking smash a Western Bacon Cheeseburger like nothing. And we don't do it all that often again, but it's just one of those things where it's like, anybody that's our age, right, knows what I'm talking about right now. That was like the go-to, and you like look forward to that, especially when you're in high school.
Yeah, it's like a play on the song that he did in, oh my God, I can't think of
it. Wolf
of Wall Street. Wolf of Wall Street. Did you see that?
Matthew McConaughey wasn't in that?
Yeah, he was. And he does that
song. When was he in that?
And he goes,
Oh, good God, I don't know where to go with this. When was Matthew McConaughey in Wolf of Wall Street? Are you sure?
Yes. Yeah.
Sorry. I can only think of Margot Robbie while we're talking about that. But I don't remember Matthew McConaughey being in that at all.
So that's what they took it from, I think.
Huh. I don't know, but like, but I was
completely freestyles that.
Dude, so fired up though.
Made millions of dollars off of it.
But so fired up when they're like pushing Western bacon cheese. Like, I want one so bad. Like every time I hear and see that clip.
Yeah, truthfully, that one did work because I found myself thinking, you know, I haven't had one in a while.
Exactly, right?
Yeah. So let's finish up this list. Boo Truck is next, which we talked about.
That's not a restaurant.
Yeah, I just want to get it on there because it's a type of...
Could you call him a restaurateur?
I think the truck,
maybe you could slide it in that way.
Yeah, I think so.
Found a loophole.
Yeah.
Okay.
I think that works.
I don't eat off a food truck. I think it's because being in the construction industry, like you have a bad relationship with truck-oriented food, right? If you're on job sites.
Yeah.
But I've had some good stuff off of some of those trucks, man.
Yeah.
Like the gourmet trucks. I'm going to call them gourmet, not job site trucks, right?
Yeah. I was cracking up a bunch of my friends after our hospital episode. A bunch of my friends from high school were sharing stories about, you know, when we used to go to the hospital. And on the way back for lunch, there was always this food truck, which we call it the Roach Coach.
Yeah, exactly. That's from like the job sites. They're like usually a powder blue color.
No, it's all white.
Diamond plate.
All white with the little blue pop-up
screen on the top. That works.
But we used to always go back to the Roach Coach on the way back from the hospital, and they had these seasoned fries that were amazing. You had to get those every time on your way back from the hospital.
There's some things you have to do.
Yeah.
Like on a road trip, there's that one place you have to, you know, like if you, like we used to go to the river all the time. I know it's not fair, but we would always stop at this one In-N-Out.
Yeah.
At this one, like, it's what you did on the way out and the way back. There was zero question in the car.
Yeah.
Everybody knew exactly where you're stopping. You weren't peeing until you got there.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, the whole thing, like, it's always like that. And the funny thing is, it's totally reminded me. So I had a buddy, a really good friend of mine. His name was Diho. We won't go into the reasons why. But the guy unfortunately had some health issues. He looked like a 6'6" Ryan Phillippe.
Yeah.
Okay. And he would like, he could eat like no other, and he had health issues, but he would, and he was a, you know, relatively lean guy, but he would always order like at 10 a.m., like for whatever reason, if he was around one, a double Western bacon cheeseburger, fries, and a Coke. And you're looking at this guy like, no wonder why you have health issues, man. Like, and you would look back in his K5 Blazer, Chevy Blazer, and would just have like these crumpled up brown Carl's Jr. bags. You know what I mean? You're like, dude.
Oh, that's terrible.
But I remember that because when you're talking hospital, he was in the hospital. I literally, because he had a procedure done, and there's a Carl's out there. And I remember saying like, hey, I'm going to come see you. You know, do you want any magazine? He's like, nah, but I want a double Western. You know what I mean?
While in the hospital.
Oh,
my God. Let's see. Where are we? Pop-up.
That was fast food. So now we get into, what's the other one?
So pop-up restaurants.
Pop-up restaurant.
Yeah. So restaurateurs are kind of doing these temporary spaces or temporary restaurants that usually run a month or two. And they have a limited menu. And it's kind of taking back to I think it actually started from the 1930s all the way up until the 70s, kind of on and off. They call them supper clubs.
Huh.
And it was sort of a restaurant that took place in like a old warehouse or
really
old rundown something. And they would go into the night and serve alcohol at night. And this is like, you know, during sort of the prohibition time.
Okay.
So you kind of transition into, you know, the illegal drinking.
Yeah.
So it's sort of a inspiration, or got inspiration from that.
Hmm.
So there's these, you know, short windows of time where they have a restaurant and they just have it for, you know, a couple months.
Crazy.
Yeah.
I've not heard of that at all.
Yeah. There's a lot of,
and seems like a lot of work for a short amount of time.
And they usually have a theme, or okay, not usually, but a lot of them have themes. So like there was a Game of Thrones pop-up restaurant. I don't know if your kids have seen this cartoon, Bob's Burgers.
No.
There was a Bob's Burgers. It's
I remember Bob's Big Boy.
No.
Okay. There's still a few left.
Yeah. So there's a Bob's Burger, which is a cartoon about a burger place.
Okay.
Pop-up restaurant, and they sort of tried to recreate what the menu would be. So that sort of thing. And then the last one is the fast casual.
And I feel like that's the dominant player in the market now.
For sure. This is like the biggest thing since sliced bread right now. everywhere you look, fast casual type restaurants popping up. So we're talking about like Panera. Five Guys is considered more of a fast casual. And what I mean by fast casual is, you know, you come up and order at the counter and then you can sit down somewhere.
It's like made to order.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And in the fast casual, it's the differentiating element is that the food is higher quality than like a McDonald's or Burger King or whatever.
That makes sense. I mean, I think because predominantly that's where we go.
Yeah.
As a family. So it's like Chipotle, right?
Yeah, Chipotle's
in there. That's one of the biggest ones. I mean, and we love that.
Blaze Pizza.
Say it again?
Blaze Pizza.
So I haven't been to a Blaze, but like we were big fans of Pieology. But okay, the other one that we really like and we go to like the whole family. So my daughter currently is going through this like gluten-free thing. Just because she's had stomach things. And to be honest with you, like I'm the first person that's like, this is punk, right? Yeah. She's had zero stomach issues since we've cut it out for 2 months.
Wow.
So, which is pretty cool, right? So nonetheless, the nice part is it's kind of prevalent in the time right now. So there's this other place called Pizza Project.
Yeah.
That's right by us, which is another Pieology-ish type place, or Blaze Pizza probably is similar. And there's something for everybody. And I want to say one of the biggest components I think that draws people in with these fast casual kids meals. Because here's the crazy thing, right? When our kids started getting a little bit older and they could eat more than just like eating off your plate to where you're like pissed because they're eating half your food.
Yeah.
Which is great, but then you're pissed, right? Like, I remember the first place I did it was Chipotle started doing it where they did a kid's meal. And it was like, they called it build your own. So they'd give the kids two, like, tortillas and then, like, three items. So they'd get, like, a protein, you know, a meat or whatever. And then they could get, like, rice or they could get salsa or whatever the deal was. And they could make their own thing. It was, like, $4.
Huh.
Right? Because your kids don't eat enough, right? I mean, they don't eat enough to pay the full boat. Well, now my son that will eats a whole burrito or a bowl at 9 years old. Yeah. Right? It's bigger than his head.
You're in trouble.
Oh, dude. Like it's up. And he eats. Like he's eating all day.
The next and, 8 to 10 years.
Yeah. Oh, dude. Like it's over. And, but like at Pizza Project, it's pretty cool to have like a kid's meal or a kid's whatever. And it's like an 8-inch pizza, which is legit. As many toppings as they want, like an apple juice and like a cookie and like the whole, and it's like $6. Huh. I mean, anybody that's listening to this, just for like, that's a draw for a family, because a pizza for me is $10 or $12. They can't eat that whole thing. I certainly can.
Yeah.
But it's like, I can get something for the kids that's kid oriented. Like, I think that's a huge thing to do, but I think fast casual is where it's at right now. I mean, people don't want fast food because it's supposedly crap, right? Yeah. Is the problem.
Yeah.
Which I don't think it all is, but it's not the best, right?
Yeah.
But you also don't want to take your kids to a place where you got to sit for half an hour because you just can't. And we don't have time for that right now. Yeah. Or we're not making time for that anymore, right?
Yeah.
Because a lot of the other countries, it's like an event. And here, it's like it's just something you have to do.
Yeah.
You know?
And sort of the elements to why this fast casual has taken off: rising rent, labor, and food costs on the restaurateur's side. This kind of benefits them in that way, cutting down on the space.
They get some volume too.
Yeah, get that volume. They don't have obviously waiters that are bringing food out, and don't understand the food costs, how they get the savings. But
I would say from this perspective, it's a lower number of SKUs. So when you go to like a fine dining restaurant, I mean, you got nice cuts of steak and chicken and all these different kinds of things, right? And it's like you're trying to, at least how it was explained to me, I mean, you're ordering in advance and a lot of it goes to waste.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Because if somebody doesn't order that, or if you've ever been like, sorry, we're out of it. You know what I mean? Those types of things. Like you go to these places and it's the same stuff. Like look at Chipotle.
And
you got chicken.
Yeah.
You got steak. You got their barbacoa, carnitas, and then some funky thing they pass off as protein, which is called
sofritas.
Super crappy or whatever it is, right? I mean, good for you guys. But if you look at that, the number of SKUs is relatively small, and you can either add something to it or not.
Yeah.
But the crazy part is you get charged the same price.
Yeah.
Right? So if you and I both go in there and you're like, you like beans and all this kind of stuff that I don't like, and I only take, rice and cheese and whatever, like they're making more off of me than they are off of you, but it's still the same amount of items that you can technically have.
Yeah.
So I think that's where that comes into play.
And I guess they nail down that science of how much steak, how much chicken, how much
whatever. That's a spoonful,
and they're not storing a whole lot in the back. So
right, and they kind of make it to order too. So it's like if you need it, they're pulling it out and throwing it on the grill and yeah, going right.
Yeah, it's kind of the best of both worlds. Yeah. On the customer side, customers are increasingly focused on, you know, quicker delivery, and this kind of gets you that faster turnaround because, you know, you just pick what you want, get the food, you can either sit down and eat it or get out and go. Rising house costs, which will push at some point, push kind of the urban dwellers further out to more suburban areas, cutting down their time to sit at restaurants and whatnot because you're spending most of your time in a car.
Commuting.
You need something that's quick, dependable, and basically high quality and reliable that you know it's going to take me, you know, 10 minutes every time that I go there or less.
Right.
And then the dual income family where both people are out of the house the majority of the time. And
don't have time to sit and make food.
Yeah, you don't have time to make food. You don't have time to sit at a, you know, longer form restaurant. So,
yep.
Oh, and then one element I wanted to point out with the fast casual that you see a lot is the open kitchen. It's like Chipotle.
Yeah.
That's kind of one of the big elements. And you see it in other restaurants.
Makes you feel safer about it.
Yeah, it's the transparency.
Yeah.
I had a buddy that used to work at a restaurant. I won't name it so you can't nail down exactly who it is. So he's a server and he goes and helps his guests. And it's at the end of the dinner and they want to box something up. He grabs their food and he walks to the back, completely forgot that they wanted to keep it or take it to go.
No.
And he chucks it in the trash can. And then he's like, oh, I forgot.
He grabbed it out of the trash can? He
grabs it out of the trash.
No, dude. Puts it back in.
I was shocked.
We all know that happens, though. You know what I mean? We all know that happens. Whether it's the spit in the food or whatever it is, you know it happens at times.
So treat your servers great so they will be honest when they do stuff like that. But yeah, that's a little nugget for you. So one example, kind of the fast casual going forward, they consider it a fast casual 2.0 because it's grabbing a lot of these elements that we talked about and making it more experience driven. Mendocino Farms, they started in LA in like a small 800 square foot space. It's a sandwich place, but their concept is completely kind of turning the industry and the fast casual dining on its head. They've started out at the 800 square foot space. Now they're up to 3,000 square foot spaces. Wow. And this is just for sandwiches. And you order at the counter and go sit down.
It's crazy.
But the twist that they have, their menu has mostly local and sustainably sourced ingredients. But the twist on the design of the space is that they have a kind of a dedicated kids area. So this is sort of McDonald's play place, but modernized.
Okay.
So you have like the, I always forget the name of it, the cornhole set.
And you said like Jenga and stuff like that. The
overgrown or oversized Jenga and, you know, all those kind of outdoor games.
Yeah.
Then it's in a dedicated space, chalkboards and everything set on like large patios. So not only is it entertaining for the guest inside, but it's engaging and inviting to people that are just walking by. There's one nearby us.
Yeah.
Just walking by. You want to go in kinda and just kind of check it out. Yeah.
Yeah.
When they open up a new space, they don't have like a set style to their store per se or design. How you get kind of a rollout of all the McDonald's.
Yeah, they all look the same. Yeah.
Each place has its own designer that does its own style that's kind of unique to that.
Interesting.
That area. So it has its own identity and kind of feeds off of the neighborhood.
Well, that makes sense. Well, it's one of those restaurants that the menu is really derived by what's local then, I would imagine, right?
Yeah, exactly. So
it kind of fits the same idea.
Yeah. And then they have some flexibility. If there's more kids in the area, they dedicate more
space to that open
space and more attention to that play area.
Smart.
And if it's more adults, they increase the adult beverages that they serve and stuff like that. The restaurateur was asked about this and he said, a lot of people say that will slow down our scaling, that we're not going to be able to open as quickly. And he always says back, when was fastness always best? We're not trying to see how many we can open. We're trying to see how many we can open at our iconic and our neighborhood anchors, which I thought was really interesting for a businessman to say. It's not about cranking out the you know, getting it out as fast as you can and increasing the profits that way. So he's kind of looking for more iconic, high quality type space. So aside from that, you said your kind of go-to place has gone more towards the fast casual.
Right? Yeah. I think that to your point, whether it's commuting or whether it's a busy life or whatever, you're not wanting to feed your kids with some of the fast food.
Yeah.
So, but you're willing to take a little bit more time to give them something a little bit better.
Yeah.
You know, and I actually like making most of our food just because it's healthier, or my wife does, not me, right? Which is amazing. But at the same point, I also think there's something to be said about being able to just everybody sit and talk, because if you don't have that much time to eat, you're also not sitting down as a family and talking much either, right? Sure. So I do like that aspect where you can sit down and kind of, you know, you're waiting for 5 to 10 minutes before the food gets there.
Yeah.
You're sitting there talking. We don't let phones and iPads and all that up there. And
yeah.
So you're able to do that. So I do like that. And yeah. I do like that aspect. I don't like rushing, mm-hmm. even though we have to move quick, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
You know, I don't think that's good for anybody. I mean, I rarely find ourselves in a fast food environment,
yeah.
like very rarely.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think, like I said, our go-tos are the Chipotles and the yeah. Pizza Projects and Corner Bakery. We used to be a big fan of a Corner Bakery.
Oh, yeah.
Which I think still kind of falls in that same aspect.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So looking at 4 trends kind of going forward for the restaurant setting is value war. So all of these restaurants are... they're looking at it as that they're not only competing with each other, but they're competing with the packaged foods, with people, you know, choosing to cook because everybody's healthier now or are trying to get healthier now. So you do, you know, as best as you can try and cook. So restaurants are kind of competing with that, as well as you see them trying to cut costs where they can. So removing some of the service elements. Saw McDonald's tried to do the kiosk thing to reduce some of their employees
overhead
and with the cost there. The next element is show. So adding more experience to your, you know, restaurant. So you get more open kitchens, and then also increasing technology at your individual table. Mm-hmm. So having iPads for the kids.
Something like to those play. Burger bars do that.
Yeah.
There's a couple that have like an iPad at the table, and you just order, and there's like, instead of having a waitress or waiter.
Yeah.
I don't know what the unisex version of that term is, but
server.
Server. Instead of having a server for so many tables, it's like there's a couple hops, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Or hoppers per all the tables, and all they're doing is just running food and just making sure you don't need anything else.
Yeah.
So I think there's going to be a lot that's going to go that way.
Yeah.
You know, I think there really will be.
Even aside from that, it's kind of about entertainment too for the family or kids, mm-hmm. so they can play with whatever game on the iPad mm-hmm. while they're waiting for their food. God forbid you talk to your family.
That's my point, right? I know, it's just it's so sad,
but yeah,
that's reality right now.
Third one is black activated charcoal in foods. So they're gonna be you're gonna start to see more foods that have been dyed and kind of tweaked to come out black, like bread and pasta.
Really?
So yeah, so I went to a restaurant that had a squid ink pasta.
I think it curled up several different ways on that one.
And like a squid ink pizza. So the crust is black or the pasta is black. So yeah, now they're gonna start doing this with activated charcoal, apparently.
That sounds horrible.
So,
well, what's interesting about the charcoal thing, if it's really in there, I mean, that's actually an absorbent inhibitor.
Huh.
Charcoal itself. I mean, that's like one of those things they used to give to people that would OD.
Yeah.
Was charcoal, because the body would flush because it couldn't absorb
interesting
nutrients. So it's kind of, I mean, I'm sure there's got to be something to it, but but you would, I mean, if you were like, if you needed to expel things, like, that's charcoal.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, I thought this was interesting because on a design front, when you're, you know, you have your concept of your store and the type of food you're going to serve. You want to have your space sort of complement the food that you're serving.
Sure.
I saw kind of mixed reviews on this, but some people think that the rustic look is going to go away. I completely disagree. I think it's going to stick around for a little bit longer. And if you're going with black food, I think that would kind of be paired well with sort of a rustic kind of look with silver type plate settings or whatever. But
yeah,
but that
could
be...
go very Soho and modern though too.
Yeah, you could. And then the last one is Instagram. So you want to frame your food because it is a, it's free publicity. People are Instagramming food. As long as the food is good, people are Instagramming food nonstop these days.
It's so annoying.
Yeah. I saw this hilarious video where people were sitting there about to take a picture of their food. And right when it's about to snap, their friend across the room just slams his knife right in the middle of the food.
Oh, yeah, for sure. I mean, I'm like sitting there going, if something looks really, really good, I'm not taking a picture of it. Yeah. Freaking, I'm getting in there, yeah. You know? Yeah, yeah, I don't know what's up. But you're right. I mean, it's all over the place.
So as you design your space, you have to consider that kind of basically creating a canvas for your food to be presented on. Yeah. So maybe oversizing your tables a little bit so that you can, you know, get nice framing on the plate.
That's funny.
But I think it's something that's worth considering when you're laying out your space. So I think that's it for me. Do you have anything else on the restaurant topic?
No, not really. I mean, I think the one thing that trumps all, no matter what, you know, version of restaurant it is just good food.
Yeah.
Right? You have to have value, yeah. And that value can be found in multiple ways, whether it's just the food itself or it's the food and the ambiance or, you know, whatever that is. But, you know, I think we all, even if it was a really cool experience or whatever, we leave with a good impression if the food was good.
Yeah.
You know, if you really enjoyed it. So.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's definitely number one because it is food. But I think the design and kind of the environment does play a part.
Oh, absolutely.
And, you know, designing a space that not only is it an appealing environment, but, you know, every time you go there, sit in a different place, it's a different experience.
It's experience. Yeah. And you said it right there. I mean, even when we were looking at our current corporate office where we're at and people were asking about design, it's like when you think about it, the whole idea was, I always use the example of a restaurant.
Yeah.
I'm like, look, you know, think of your favorite restaurant. There's two things that come to mind. One, was the food good? Because yeah. No matter what, you wouldn't go back if food wasn't good. So yeah. That's what I'm saying. The food's got to be good.
Yeah.
And two is the experience.
Yeah.
The ambiance, the music, you know, the smells, everything.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? How it flows and how quickly you get seated, the service, everything there. So it's all in the experience.
Yeah.
And food has to be there, clearly, because you're trying to go to eat.
Yeah.
But it's all about the experience.
Yeah. So with that, we'll kind of wrap this up. We don't have any listener mail today, so we will skip that, but we want to kind of remind you guys, if you want to get in touch with us, feel free to send us an email or contact us on social media. Email is hello@spacespodcast.com. Facebook is facebook.com/spacespodcast. On Twitter, @spacespodcast. On Instagram, instagram.com/spacespodcast. LinkedIn is linkedin.com/company/spaces-podcast. Thank you again for spending some time with us. If you enjoyed this episode, please rate and like it and forward the link of the show to a friend, because your support is the only way that this grows. And if you just stumbled upon the show, please subscribe so you don't miss another episode. And don't forget to check out spacespodcast.com under the listen tab. You'll see photos of the projects that we talked about, videos, links to articles, everything you need to know about what we talked about today. And with all that said, if you're catching up, hit next. Or if you're listening as we put these out, we'll see you in a couple weeks. Thanks.
See you.
Calling all AEC professionals. Get ready for unparalleled professional insights with detailed and original podcasts by RCAT. This is the podcast that brings you the untold stories and lessons learned behind the design and delivery of a building project. Hey, it's Charisse Lakeside, aka the CSI Kraken, and your host. Join me as we dive deep into the tales of conflict, triumph, and sheer ingenuity.
Yeah, so when Serena was named for the, it was going to be named for the building, we really were able to work with teams at Nike Branding and how to really infuse her influence and identity in the very public spaces.
Detailed features architects, engineers, builders, and manufacturers who spill the beans on the most complex, interesting, and downright odd building conditions they've encountered.
Another challenge of the shuttle is actually in putting it in launch position is how you brace that seismically. It's really supported by only two pins at the base of the booster rockets. And there's a large base isolator that's underneath the shuttle that kind of prevents it from moving too much in an earthquake.
When you have 600 people or 300 people in a room, acoustically, you really need a high floor to floor so that you can have the right acoustic environment for people to be able to talk and that speech intelligibility is really good.
Every episode unveils lessons learned and connects you to the products you need to navigate similar challenges. Follow the link in the show notes to subscribe to Detailed today and be prepared for the unexpected on your next project. Every building has a story, and we are here to tell it.